right. Today is March 20th, 2014, allegedly the first day of spring. It is sunny. I'm here with Gabe Javier. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Yes, it is.
Okay. This interview is for our LGBTQ oral history project. My name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the UW-Mass and Oral History Program. Gabe, for sound quality purposes, could you say your name and spell your last name?
My full name is Gabriel Javier. I go by Gabe. It's J-A-V as in Victor, I-E-R.
Perfect. Thank you. Gabe, before we turned on the recorder, I said that this session we're going to focus at least most of it on your time at UW-Madison.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see where it goes. So I wonder if you could give the overview of what got you here to UW-Madison.
So prior to being at UW-Madison, I worked at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor at the Spectrum Center, which is the LGBT campus center at UM at Michigan. I worked there for approximately 5 years as assistant director and then a senior assistant director. I also did my master's work at Michigan in higher education. So what got me here was after 5 years of sort of increasing responsibility at Michigan and being really engaged in the professional field of LGBT higher education, I began sort of looking at what some other options would be in terms of directing my own center. I was sort of eager to see what that experience would be like, and I felt professionally prepared, though anxious and nervous about the variables at play. So so I interviewed in a couple places, and the stars just seemed to align with Madison. So I threw my hat in the ring and was offered the position.
Great. And I wonder if you could take a minute or two to talk about the interview process here. I know you said you interviewed a couple different places,
mm-hmm.
but if you could sort of walk through the process of, you know, basically from finding out about the job to being offered it.
Yeah, you know, I knew that there was an interim, Robin Mathias, and I knew that Robin was also putting her hat in the ring for the permanent director position. I also, it's funny, I think very early on in the process, Robin and I were actually invited to a conference together. So we saw each other there and, you know, sort of said good luck to each other because we had known each other at least casually because of our interaction in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that the previous director, Eric, had left a year prior. I remember the day of my phone interview, that it was the day of one of the large protests at the Capitol against Scott Walker. So I remember the recall protests, rather. So I remember that very vividly. I remember saying at the phone interview, you know, I appreciate everyone taking the time. I know that there's a lot going on there right now. So, you know, after the phone interview, subsequently lucky enough to be invited to do an on-campus interview, I remember that day being kind of cold and rainy, and I think it was April-ish. I remember my supervisor and the hiring assistant, associate dean, Argyle Wade, was, you know, showed me around campus, and I got a tour, of course did the public presentation, several other interviews, stayed at the Edgewater. I think I ordered Glasnickel to eat.
Had you been to Madison before this?
So I'd been to Madison once prior for the MBLGTACC conference, the Midwest LGBT College Conference, when Madison hosted it. And that would have been maybe 2011. We hosted it in 11, so 2010. The conference itself was not held on campus. It was held in Monona Terrace. So I didn't really get to explore campus very much. Mm-hmm. What I do remember about that particular mumble tech was that there were some conflicts regarding LGBTQ people of color and the planning committee and LGBTQ people of color representation at the conference itself. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So you've had your first couple of experiences with Madison was linked to conflict protests. Sounds like a phone interview during the 2011 protests.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of activism. And that was one of the first messages I sort of received about the culture of Madison, is that there is a history of activism. And may or may not be connected to protests, but certainly student voice and activism, which as I learned more about the spirit of shared governance, certainly matched that. So.
Okay. And do you recall what your public presentation was on?
The public presentation was on meeting the needs, I believe I remember meeting the needs of LGBTQ students of color. Or in what ways are the needs of LGBTQ students of color contrast compared to majority white LGBTQ students.
So. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously you're a person of color yourself, mm-hmm. but in Michigan, were you working with a lot of LGBTQ students of color?
We were. You know, I identify as Filipino, and my parents are immigrants from the Philippines. So certainly my lived experience lends to experiences of you know, serving students who are majority LGBT versus minoritized populations at the intersection of their identity. So yes, we were very intentional at Michigan and here now about creating spaces intended for LGBTQ students of color to connect and be in community. So it was certainly something that I was already doing that I felt like I had the capacity to continue to do here.
Mm-hmm. So, when you were offered the job, had you already completed your master's work in Michigan?
Mm-hmm. So, the offered job here in Madison?
Yeah,
I'd been 5 years out at that point.
Okay.
So, when I was at Michigan, I also worked in sexual violence prevention. While doing my master's work and a bit of time after my master's work. So really my roots in higher education are in sexual violence prevention. And I stumbled into doing LGBT work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You want to talk a little bit more about the stumbling into LGBT work? Even though it wasn't, you know, you'd already been doing it before you came here. I think that's something interesting.
Sure. What's funny is that not long after, or near the end of my graduate studies at Michigan, one of the local Michigan theater groups, student theater groups, was putting on the Laramie Project, which is a play about the occurrences that happened in Laramie, Wyoming, right after the death of Matthew Shepard, who's an openly gay college student who was targeted and subsequently beaten and tied to a post to die in Wyoming because of his sexual orientation, or connected to his sexual orientation. So there's a church called the Westboro Baptist Church, and they go around protesting in sort of a very fanatical way. They protest, you know, America's quote-unquote acceptance of gay people and connect everything from improvised explosive devices in Iraq and Afghanistan to America's acceptance of gay people. So they also run this website called God Hates Fags, and so they announced that they were coming to Ann Arbor to protest the play. So as a graduate student, they sort of said, like, okay, well, what's going on? Is anyone coordinating a response? The answer was no. Because the center at the time, I didn't work at the center at the time. The center at the time said, well, you know, we really feel like it should come grassroots. And so I ended up organizing this large-scale, nonviolent, peaceful protest to this group, to Fred Phelps. And after it was all said and done, you know, it was there were a lot of people there. We did a lot of fundraising for it. We did a lot of awareness raising. And after that was all said and done, the director of the center called me and said, you know, you did a great job organizing this. Do you want a job here? And I said, I don't know what that means. So that was, for all intents and purposes, part of my job interview, was me planning that protest, and I had no idea. I didn't. So,
So had you done anything like that before?
Planned a protest?
Yeah.
I'd planned large events before, but I hadn't ever planned a protest per se. You know, it was very interesting, the whole planning of it as well, because, you know, I felt like we needed to get some good input, so I had a couple, or one at least, like, sort of town hall meeting for people to come and talk about what they felt like they wanted to do in response to this, to Fred Phelps and his group coming. And, you know, it was a really, you know, I think, great example, or one of my favorite examples of sort of coalition building.
Do you have anything more you want to say about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is all great, and obviously part of oral history is trying to get a context mm-hmm. of your life, and I'm sure we'll get back to a bit more about that. So you got the job offer to come here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously you accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
How long was the lag time, do you remember, between job offer and starting?
The lag time for... Gosh.
Just a rough idea. It doesn't need to be.
Probably 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah, certainly. Because you finishing out one school year and then wanting to be on board before the next school year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that I was on boarded over the summer. I should have. I'll look that stuff up and clarify.
Yeah. I mean, I think from what I found about, I think you officially started in August of 2011.
Mm-hmm,
I
mm-hmm.
found a one-page thing about you online through the LGBT Center. But anyway.
That would make sense. And I probably, yeah, I think I moved in, because I think that I remember there was consternation about when I would be able to move into an apartment because Madison has that weird August 14th, August 15th thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very lucky to be able to find something where I could move in July.
So, let's get a little bit of context about initially coming to Madison.
Uh-huh.
So where did you find a place to live?
I found a place to live in the Near East Side, about a block away from James Madison Park. Very fortunate, really lucky to find a place that had, you know, that I really like my neighbors. It's a great neighborhood. You know, I have a dog, so there's a small yard for him. So.
So it was an apartment, but it had space, some
uh-huh.
open space, and obviously pet friendly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you got here, you mentioned when you interviewed here that you ordered in glass nickel pizza, but I'm wondering, you know, if you got here and started to become familiar with the neighborhood,
uh-huh.
what sort of places would you go to eat or get a drink?
Well, you know, I was really close to Johnson Public House on Johnson,
mm-hmm.
a coffee shop there. And I remember going there my first couple days in town, going there several times because they had internet, which I did not yet have. And they also happened to have Michigan beers. So I remember, you know, getting a Bell's Oberon and I specifically being like, okay, they have Michigan beer here. It feels like I'm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is there were several students who I had worked with at Michigan who graduated the same time I was leaving Ann Arbor to work at Epic.
Mm-hmm.
So I had at least a couple of people that I knew in town. So that eased the transition.
Did they live near where you lived? Or
They lived near East. So, you know, using the campus as sort of the compass point, you know, saying, okay, the terrace, let's go to the terrace and figure that out. And, my first couple of months were just very focused on, like, getting my apartment together. And my neighbors, my upstairs neighbors, moved in at the same time I did.
Mm.
And so they one was a UW senior at the time, and then his girlfriend had recently got a job in town, so we were, you know, learning the new spaces together too, so that was good.
So, not necessarily community per se, but there were you had people.
Definitely.
Almost immediately who could help you ease the transition.
I wasn't completely alone, which was helpful.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So how did you feel your first, you know, day or few days or first week at work coming in here?
You know, it was, you know, it was, I don't know if awkward is the right word or the most appropriate word. It was certainly, it was hard, you know, it was hard. Some of the factors that made it hard was, like, I think the physical space of the center at the time was not conducive to building community. It was August, so there weren't a whole lot of students around quite yet. You know, I was in a situation where the person who would be my assistant director had been interim director and then up for the director position and was not. So, you know, I was working with essentially an internal candidate who did not get the job. So that, I was walking into a lot of spaces that were not mine, right? And had suddenly been, that I've suddenly been given charge over. So it was a very tough first year, I would say.
So let's get back to the physical space.
Mm-hmm.
When you came, was it still inside Memorial Union?
It was.
Okay. In the whatever.
The second floor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was there? I mean, obviously, Robin was still here.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any sort of? I'll use the word. Sports term, any sort of playbook or anything that you were given that's saying, you know, here's some of the things you need to do or you should be thinking about?
Absolutely. So yeah, I would say that came in a couple different forms. Like there were certainly the HR things I needed to do, which, you know, I wanted to do as early as possible to sort of get that stuff out of the way. And then, you know, there were a list of people that Argyle, my boss, had said you need to meet with these people to get a framework of what's happening. And then there was a list of people that Robin and the staff felt like I should meet with, so I met with those folks too. And then there were people that I wanted to meet with, and there were certainly people on all three lists that I met with, but there were other folks I wanted to make sure to spend some concerted time, effort, and conversation with.
So lots of meetings to start off with?
Yeah, a lot of relational meetings to begin with. Yeah, for the first 6-8 months, definitely.
Did those happen in a variety of places on campus?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it sounds like that might have also been a way for you to learn a little
learn
bit
campus,
about campus.
Yeah. And plus, you know, the center at the time was not conducive to meetings. You know, it was a wide open space with some desks, and the director had a cube that had no door. And was sort of tucked away, and it just, the space, it just wasn't, it didn't feel like it struck the balance of professional and, community that I think we have now, you know.
Gabe, when did the transition from Memorial Union to here occur?
Almost immediately when I got here, actually. I think we were only in that space for 2 months before we... So I started in August, and then we had our grand opening in October of that year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the space had already been under construction, and so, again, like, I was walking into a situation where a lot of the space considerations and design things were made without, like, prior to me being here.
Right.
So, and I mean, I think it turned out great. I think what we have is awesome. You know, certainly there are some things that are like, oh, we could have done this and this, but, you know, very lucky to have the space that we have now.
Anything major that, you know, if you could have been here a year or 18 months before and been involved in the planning, that you would have at least tried to influence?
I probably would have tried to somehow build a third cubicle or a third space for a third staff member, full-time staff member, so that we could... It makes it easier to advocate for another staff member if it looks like there's a place to put them.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some things about the light that I might have put a strip that opened up into the next office, mm-hmm. so there would have been some natural light mm-hmm. to flow in. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's nothing that. And there were some design elements that I was able to affect.
Okay.
So it wasn't too late, but it mm-hmm. was certainly near the end stages.
Right. But compared to what you walked into 2 months before Memorial, I mean, it had to be a substantial improvement in terms of space.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because it does seem, you know, we're in your office.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does seem to have a balance of sort of private spaces, professional spaces, and
mm-hmm.
then the open community spaces.
Right.
Okay.
And I think that we strike that pretty well. And, you know, honestly, like, the old space, like, I couldn't have a one-on-one meeting with someone. I would have to, I mean, with the one-on-one meetings I would have, we would have to go down to the Ross Keller or the Sifts Keller or the Paul Bunyan room, like, and hope we find a table tucked away somewhere.
Right.
I mean, this is not appropriate if someone wants to come and talk about their coming out or their family struggles, or if I wanted to have a supervisor meeting, like, that stuff just wasn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, I remember when I got there, like, there was a desktop computer, but the computer was just... It was not good. It was an old machine that had not been updated, that was not usable. So I ended up using my laptop for the first sort of 6 to 8 months. And I remember taking, when I was in the center of the union, I would take my laptop and work out on the couches in the living room space, because I felt like I was just tucked away. Like, I just wasn't in the space with other people, that you need to be in that space with other people. So
mm-hmm.
I remember that being difficult as well. So
yeah, I guess it comes back to you saying, you know, walking into a space or a situation that had already been
right
previously created for you.
Right. And you know, as soon as I got here, one of the biggest things they asked me to address was the library, because there's a large library moving over to this space. There was not going to be the capacity for us to bring all the books with us, but the library was sort of a hard-fought battle from a previous director, and there was consternation about whether or not we should downsize that library. So that was one of the first things that I sort of had to figure out, like, and what was difficult, because arriving in August, I really didn't know how much people or who used the library, or what, if there was, you know, political importance to the library. So
how did you, I mean, you could talk about the process of how you
mm-hmm.
worked through that, and then what was the final outcome of that?
Well, you know, the process was mainly sort of trying to get as much secondhand information I could in terms of how the library was designed, and how the collection was sort of how it was sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, curated, how the collection
Oh, okay.
was curated.
Mm-hmm.
I met with the chair of GWS, because I know that GWS sort of had an investment in the library, or at least I think that they were pretty instrumental in getting the library as integrated into the library system. We happened to have a really great library intern at the time, Jonathan Carlson, who's a master's in library sciences student, who helped us with the transition. And in the end, what we ended up doing was downsizing the library. You know, I think we went from something like 6 to 8 shelves to like the 3 shelves we have now.
Mm-hmm.
We determined what were unique holdings, and also in terms of books, unique holdings and holdings that were our most trafficked,
mm-hmm.
and also things that we sort of felt were foundational texts about and by queer authors.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept those, and the rest we sent to college, and Memorial, and then we committed to continuing to have a robust DVD library because most people were coming in for DVDs, mm-hmm. you know. And so we downsized, and we were able to maintain our standing as a university library. And I think, honestly, now our connection to the libraries and how we curate the collection and where we've brought, where the library is now is a great improvement. I think it's grown. Mm-hmm. I think we're able to grow how our library is used without necessarily growing the number of titles we have. Because I think what we do is we really determine what are people wanting using, what are people coming in for, what are the things that we have, and those are the things that can bring people in. Mm-hmm. And we understand the library to be both a service, a direct service, but also a point of entry. So students who come into the space and use as their point of entry the library, we have the opportunity to engage for other reasons.
Right. So it sounds like to me anyway, you had the mini crash course in librarianship, or at least being able to work with librarians on.
Well, I think that mini crash course was, I think, asking and thinking and considering what to do with the library was a good, it was a good first go at how I felt like I, in the future, reflecting back on it, you know, how I would have to, the best way to make decisions, community-based mm-hmm. decisions.
Okay.
And, you know, even after we had decided the library was going to be downsized and moved, I had students say, well, like, how come you didn't ask us, you know? And I said, well, you're right. I think that we could have engaged students more. Mm-hmm. We were limited to the time frame. You know, mm-hmm. I had arrived in August, decision had to be made in September, and we moved in October. So it was an accelerated process, and I had the impression that a lot of that decision making was being waited on until the new director came. Mm-hmm. So it was a question in the hopper.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So you move here, and the semester starts soon after you start here. Is there things you're involved in or asked to attend that are specifically LGBT campus stuff?
Like that aren't our programs? Or?
Right. Like anything campus, like a campus-wide mixer or anything like that? That
not really. Not at the time, there really were the things that were LGBT-focused, and to some extent still, the things that are LGBT-focused come out of our office.
Okay.
So, you know, our major Welcome Week event is the Ice Cream Social. And it was, for all intents and purposes, planned when I got here, you know. Again, like, my theme of my first year was sort of, like, figuring out, you know, I was inheriting, basically, all of these programs that I had not designed. So, the Ice Cream Social is one of those. So, mm-hmm. figuring out what that was to the community, like, the significance and the history tied to it.
So, let's give you space to talk a bit more about that, because it's something that I'm not sure, at least in the interviews I've done, that we've had people talk about it. So let's start with what you knew about it coming in, and then if you've made any changes or tweaks to it over your time.
The Ice Cream Social
itself? Yeah.
Yeah, so the Ice Cream Social, I don't know much about the history of it, but I know that the center has been doing it for a long time. It's the primary Welcome Week event for the LGBTQ community. It's considered a signature Welcome Week, Wisconsin Welcome event. We invite organizations that are affiliated or have interest in, or generally meet the mission of the center, and they table. So it's framed also as a resource fair. And then there's ice cream. So that's basically the gist of it.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be, I think it's bounced around in location a bit too. So the first year I was here, it was in the Great Hall. And subsequent years, now we've done it here in the Red Gym, in the All Wisconsin Room.
Okay.
And we get, you know, anywhere from 800 to 1,000 people walk through. So it's a huge event. it's only grown since I've been here because the space is a little smaller, so it feels bigger. And I think that we have done a more intentional job of working with house fellows, so they know to bring their residents over. You know, we do like a photo booth so people can get photos, and Bucky comes and people are delighted to see Bucky. And this past year, actually, we were lucky enough to have Congressman Mark Pocan and the Chancellor Blank come and give greetings to the community. So it was great to be able to do that.
Is that your biggest event, outreach event, or is that just one of
many? I'd say that's our biggest outreach event, but we do several other different Wisconsin Welcome events aimed at different communities. So we'll do a different type of event where people just come and hang out in the space. And we do that because not everyone feels like, you know, people may connect with other people different ways, and like being in a really loud space with a bunch of other people may not be the best way for some folks. So we have an event that people could come and just do crafts and hang out and meet other folks. We also have an event specifically intended for LGBTQ students of color. We try to do an event for graduate students, you know. And we do so many events because I strongly feel like core pillars of our mission is to help facilitate the building of community. And I think that part and parcel being LGBT is an invisible community, invisible social identity. So the ability for us to not only get ourselves out there, but be able to say, like, you know, we're a really great place to start. Like, you may find community on your own, but you could certainly find types of community here. Mm-hmm. And so our Wisconsin Welcome events, we try to reflect that.
So are the student of color event, the graduate student event, are those all happening that first week as well?
Pretty much, yeah, up until mid-September.
So to maybe look at a big picture then, when do you start thinking about, well, you probably think about it all the time, but when do you start thinking about and actually start to plan Welcome Week events?
We'll probably start, you know, I think that the first thing that we'll do is reserve the space, which we do anywhere up to 9 months out, just to make sure that we have it. We always have it on the first day of class. So that would probably be the first thing we do. And then really in May is when we assign student staff to the project, and they start doing the outreach and stuff. It's pretty formulaic. In terms of what happens, mm-hmm. we don't change a whole lot. We end up changing a little bit about how the space is configured. We've taken over more of the Red Gym, so I think we've moved into... So we do some things in the On Wisconsin room, and some things here in the center, and then some things down the hall in 106. So we have sort of this hive of activity happening, and we've spread things out because we want to commit to making things accessible. So the tabling fair, for example, there's fewer tables in that space, so we can have some wider access, so in case someone comes with a mobility assistance or something, mm-hmm. it's still accessible to them. And you know, and people want to be involved, and people want to come, and so we try to really draw people in.
So the students, obviously, are students who are going to, well, I shouldn't say obviously, I'm assuming these are students who are going to return, and I'm guessing students that have either worked with you or volunteered with you that you feel comfortable in working these activities. Is that it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you know, we have a really active student, undergrad student staff right now. I think we have 6 students. And we do a lot of training with them, so that they have competency around what our programs are, but they also really serve as our ambassadors at our events. You know, at our events, when we have a lot of students especially, like, they know, or they're charged with really being the first person to greet people and interacting with people. And certainly the Ice Cream Social is one of those those first opportunities. You know, we want people to feel like they have a positive experience, their first experience coming to the campus center.
And do you have students, or have you, I mean, you've only been here 2.5 years, but have you had students who've worked with you the whole time that since you've been here? Were these students you inherited or students you were able to hire?
For the most part, people we were able to hire. I don't think any of the students that were here my first year are here now, that I didn't hire, that's to say. And we're actually, you know, the students we have now, most of them are seniors and are leaving, and so they've been sort of at least engaged the past 2 years, if not longer.
Are your students a space to help bring in the next crop of students?
Yeah, I often tell the students, yes, because their friend groups tend to gravitate towards the space. So that's one way. You know, we have them do outreach visits to other campus organizations and make connections to the other organizations in which they are affiliated. And, you know, we have a couple of staff who are just sophomores, and so engaging them in sort of their long-term plan, because, you know, students are more valuable as a resource in their second year and even more valuable in their third year. So helping to foster that or sustain commitment is important. And it's a living history, you know, so.
And you talked about training. Is there a specific training procedure that they go through when they start working?
Yep, so we have a student staff training that's 2 days long. The year, it happens maybe the weekend before classes start, week before, and we do some of it's logistical, like this is how the center runs, and these are some of the community norms that we have. And some of it is, you know, we spend time on, okay, we will do like a personality or leadership style assessment with them to help them see the different ways that our team is strong and where we need to stretch ourselves. We'll also do some active discussion about sort of the how we operate philosophically, you know, operating through a social justice intersectional lens, and what does that mean for each of us, and what does that mean when we schedule, when we plan programs.
Go ahead.
So we'll do a lot of that work, and then, you know, team building and bonding over meals and stuff like that.
Does this happen in this space?
Yep. So we'll often close for a couple of days.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because it's a sort of a, perhaps a double-edged sword. You know, obviously you want your students to be in the space, but there might be students who want to use the space or would like to have the space.
Yeah, well, sometimes we'll close or we'll do them like a part of it on a weekend afternoon or something.
Okay.
Actually,
that's, I hadn't thought of this. So, I mean, obviously you're well, I assume salaried, you know, 12-month hire, 12-month contract. But there are times, I'm assuming, that you're not here. But first off, when is the center open? I mean, how many hours do you need to have somebody here?
We are formally open 9 to 5, Monday through Friday.
Okay.
Now, the hours that we're here are often far beyond that, you know. And that may mean the center is open and there's something going on here, or if there is an extraneous meeting that I need to have by appointment, or if we're running something that just, like an event that puts us open after hours. Or even our student staff use this space as a study space.
Right.
So they have keys, so they will often come in on a Sunday and have a study group or something, because it's an alternate space and then we want them to use it like that. So,
Well, plus it's a space they feel comfortable in.
Absolutely.
And not that UW-Madison is perhaps more inviting than other campuses, it still is a big campus where to provide them a space where they can go.
Right, yeah, that's, you know, one of the important things about what we do as well. So how do we mitigate the barriers between the student and their learning? And one of those barriers may or may not be feeling like a space is for them. So for our students, to whatever effect they feel the space is for them, they know that perhaps their sexual orientation or gender expression may not be questioned in the same way as studying in college or Memorial or the Historical Society or whatever. You know, we want to provide that.
Mm-hmm. So during Welcome Week, I mean, you're open 9 to 5, but I'm guessing events are happening all throughout that week at not any hour, but I'm guessing hours outside of 9 to 5.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, our ice cream social is 4:30 to 6:30. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's an example.
So are you... I'm sure you haven't quantified this, but how long? So in the build-up to Welcome Week and Welcome Week, how much are you working?
Oh, I think, you know, I often say there are certain times of the year where I tell the staff that it's sort of all hands on deck. So certainly Welcome Week is one of those. But we, as professional staff, I try to make sure that we are, we parse out who's going to be lead on which events.
Mm.
But I would say, you know, I just joke with my family that I've never had a Labor Day off, because Labor Day is usually the right before the first day of classes, right? And there's Welcome Week events on Labor Day, and, you know, we're getting ready for Welcome Week on Labor Day, so it tends to be, we tend to spike our events really that first couple weeks of September, and then throughout October, and then again in April.
So not so much the first week of spring term.
Okay. No, yeah. I mean, for the first week of spring term, this year was the first year we did like a welcome week, a welcome spring event.
But it was just one event.
It was just one event, as opposed to four different types of events.
Okay. Gabe, I want to spend a few more minutes here before we wrap up. So we've been talking a lot about this space. And your interaction in this space, but I want to talk a little bit about your interaction on campus. So you mentioned a couple of times who your supervisor was. Is that still your same?
Argyle Wade.
Okay. And we talked a little bit, and Argyle, you talked a little bit about how Argyle had sort of set up meeting people that he felt you needed to meet.
Yep.
Do you recall who some of those people were?
Yeah, I know certainly every director of our division was on there, as well as the people who run diversity programs and housing. Some of the folks in the Division of Equity, Educational Access and Diversity, that's not the right name, it's the Chief Diversity Officer, yeah. So folks in that sort of shop, folks at UHS who were strong partners with the center that I met with. So, also some key faculty who were involved in the center.
So staff and faculty.
Sure.
You're meeting with. But actually, it sounds like more primarily your either classified or academic staff. So in a sense, your cohorts. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then how did you? Either with help from your supervisor or others or on your own, how did you start to learn about campus in general?
I think these relational meetings were very instructive and helpful and interesting. You know, I think that everyone sort of had their own insider perspective. So everyone was very willing to sort of, which was really helpful and great, you know, to share their, how they saw the institution and the center through their own lens. Which was good. I wanted all those data points. You know, I wanted to be able to draw the most complete picture of how we interact with people across campus. And that's something that I'll never, that picture will never be done. It'll never be finished because people are constantly adding new things to it. So I think that, yeah, it was really interesting. And the difference between the ways that people access the center was interesting to see and consider. And being able to ascertain which relationships we needed to take more care with, which relationships we needed to grow and why, was interesting.
And perhaps which relationships were fairly strong and stable, and not that they didn't need to continue to be nurtured, but...
Right, and which relationships were fraught with a lot of sort of implications and politics and history that I did not make what was the inheritor of.
Right. So another example of you walking into a situation that that you had to deal with things of not of your doing.
Sure. Right. Which is incumbent upon starting a new job at a place, right? So.
Did you find? Well, I'll ask it this way. I mean, I came here not from UW-Madison. I came here not from any other campus. I was working in public history. And so I found just the ability to have that naivete to be very helpful.
Sure.
And if somebody didn't like the program before I got here, it seemed that they were willing to give me sort of the benefit of the doubt because I was new. I'm wondering if you sort of found that as well.
Absolutely. It's an incredibly useful tool to people to say, like, I really don't understand what this is about. Or, you know, and I think people do offer you the benefit of the doubt and some leeway to be able to get the feet under you or to at least understand the lay of the land. You know, and I'm the type of person who likes to control as many variables as possible, especially when events and stuff like that or how a center works. I like to make sure that we're all sort of micro-informed of what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, trying to parse out the histories of people that at least, since some of these histories have a direct or indirect impact on the life of the center, so trying to figure those out is always sort of harrowing and takes a lot of energy, so... Mm-hmm.
Did you learn these things through these informational meetings you had? Meaning, I mean, how did you know or that some of these really, where some of these relationships stood before you got here?
Yeah, I think that certainly the informational meetings, I think that I had some great friends. So the director of the Multicultural Student Center at the time, Dante, was a great ally of mine in helping me to sort of wayfind my way across campus, both literally and sort of figuratively.
So you had some good mentors?
I did. I had some good, and certainly Argyle, you know, was good at that as well. And I sort of took all the things that a lot of people were telling me a lot of things about a lot of things, right? So I was just able to have those things in a bank and sort of mentally refer to them in my mind as I talk to people, you know, not knowing, you know, part of these relational meetings is trying to understand someone's self-interest. So I certainly learned a lot in that first 6 to 8 months.
Mm-hmm. So you referenced the library as a pretty big initial task or project. Were there other things that, again, either you inherited or maybe you decided you were going to do as sort of these initial, an initial first year, first 6 months, trying to get something, a project done?
You know, I think that, aside from the library, I think that, you know, redesigning or re-upping some of our educational opportunities, so the capacity for the center to do education for and with the campus at large, I think was something we didn't have the capacity to do prior. So building that up was exciting, and really that entailed letting people know that we were a legitimate and knowledgeable resource about several different types of content areas.
So we talked about this at the beginning, but let's bring this a little bit more forward too. So as you became, you know, as comfortable as you can be the first 6 to 8 months in a job where you have all these things going on, what other sort of spaces outside of campus were you getting to know and becoming familiar with?
The Near East Side and Willie Street, I think were definitely places I was learning more about. I had friends who are acquaintances that who had lived here or who knew people here that I was connecting with, you know.
So besides the coffee shop on Johnson, which is called Johnson Public, right?
Public House. Mm-hmm.
What other sorts of either, you know, coffee shops or bookstores or restaurants?
You know, went as meeting people, certainly hang out in places like the Shamrock, which is a gay-owned and operated bar off the square. I remember going to, and I still do, go to Ha Long Bay, which is a Vietnamese Thai restaurant on Willie Street. You know, really wanting like comforting Asian food.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember doing that quite often. I remember going to the Weary Traveler, also on Willie. Just, you know, as I met people, meeting people over food or drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Because I got here in August, you know, so August is not a summer month for student affairs. You know, it's August is a work month. So I did spend a lot of time on campus, spend a lot of time. I remember my first week here was also house fellow training. So one of the first things I did was like go and greet and say hello to all the house fellows, which was, you know, I felt wholly unprepared to do. So,
but probably quite useful.
But just, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, hey, I'm the new director of the LGBT Campus Center. This is my face, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, I think that's another example of a relationship that I had to negotiate that I wasn't used to negotiating, was the relationship with housing.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because in Michigan, my previous institution, housing was in the Division of Student Life. But housing is not in the Division of Student Life here. So structurally, there are things that I had to get used to that were just different. And I think that's actually one of the sort of the macro things that I find so interesting, is how institution, how structure defines relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, we did not have, I would say, a formal relationship with housing, you know, before we started, before now. And the other thing about the relational meetings, what was important for me, and I think what is, you know, sort of my style is getting to know people and their work and where their self-interest is and where we can connect, because it will certainly help as I think about other ways that our partnership can be mutually beneficial, right? So, because, you know, I think that this place and many other places, there's formal processes, and the processes that are made easier by relationships with people. And I think that's just a universal, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's just a universal thing. So,
did you have, it might be impossible to verbally quantify, but did you have a moment early on where you thought, oh crap, right, I'm the boss. Like, this decision really is mine, it's not.
Yeah, I would say, you know, probably the library was one of those decisions. I think when we came to space decisions, I was suddenly sort of, because both of those ways, like, I was said, hey, give approval to this or make a decision on this, and I had only, at best, a third of the context and information.
Mm.
You know, and, you know, I will say that, you know, Robin and Argyle gave me as much as I could possibly have been given, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, like, there's a difference between, you know, knowing the history because you read about it or everything, versus like, oh, I was part of this, of the culminating decisions that got us here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, again, being micro-informed, like, okay, why this and this, or what about this, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's hard to not feel like, you know, the library is saying, like, okay, make a decision about whether you want this library to be big or small. Like, I don't know who's connected to the library. I don't know if there's people in the library, like, every week or every day, or, so.
Mm-hmm. So, it also sounds like, I mean, you had the, oh, right, I'm the boss moment, almost right off the bat, because you were coming in, there were decisions that were postponed.
Right.
But then, okay, welcome aboard. Now here are
mm-hmm.
two major things that you need to decide here and then
mm-hmm.
whenever.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably hit you almost immediately.
Right, and then there were also things like, again, the space is a good example too, because when I got here in August, the date to have the space finished was August, and we all know that when it's sort of like I'll be there between 2 and 8, you know, it happens at some point. Mm-hmm. So then we really weren't ready to move in until October, and October is our biggest programming month, right? So how do we balance all those things? Like, so managing a facility was one thing that was pretty new to me. So being able to manage the facility and say, okay, so we have this going on and this going on and this going on. Like, oh, can you check if the carpet's in? Are the baseboard in? Or do you want to sign on the outside? You know, you know, those things are just like, I'll make a decision, but so I mean, it was. I mean, again, I'm happy with how things turned out. It was just certainly there were things as I landed that were sort of already in play that I had to catch up with, mm-hmm. which is going to be like with any job. Right? So
right, and one or two more things.
Yeah.
And I'm jumping around here, but you sort of referenced earlier two or three places on Willie Street, and I assume you must have lived in Ann Arbor for a pretty good chunk of time.
7 years.
Were there places in Madison as you started to get to know, it's like, oh, this reminds me of this place in Ann Arbor, where the two experiences
paralleled?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that we both Ann Arbor and Madison have state streets that are central to campus, and I think that in a similar way they're sort of designed very similarly, a mix of shops, some residential and food places, lots of bars, lots of places where undergrads go. So in those, you know, there's a Chipotle at both of those places. There's like sushi restaurants, you know. So mm-hmm. it was like, okay, well, not dissimilar. And you know, honestly, when I got here, I'm like, okay, I wonder how similar things are going to be. I mean, both Madison and Arbor are flagship institutions in red states, in liberal cities, you know, with large Big Ten populations. They're actually quite different, you know. So that comparison, I felt, was interesting. But in terms of spaces I was getting to know, you know, I think that, you know, one major difference is that Ann Arbor is not the capital of the state. Mm-hmm. So I think having, and Ann Arbor doesn't also have like this huge industry of Epic. So a lot of the young professionals I was meeting were Epic folks, you know, and but you know, I also, in terms of like parallel spaces, was learning coffee shops and learning the different personalities of the different coffee shops. Like going to Mother Fools is very different than going to Johnson Public House, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What was in my walking distance, or what my new walking distance would be, or
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm. and plus you have an animal to
mm-hmm.
you know, take care of too, which also, you know, get reflecting back about asking you how many hours you were here. You have to balance the idea that you have somebody that needs you.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that what's interesting is as I was at in Ann Arbor, in grad school, and when I was working in Ann Arbor. I didn't live near campus, so I would drive back and forth, and I lived alone, so I often used to say, like during grad school, that my dog would keep me human, because I would have to leave, you know, my office to go home and take care of this my dog who needed me to go to the bathroom, you know. You know, here, like, you know, it's great, like, I'm a mile from campus, I take the bus, and my neighbors, you know, they're upstairs neighbors, and our dogs hang out all day anyway,
mm-hmm.
and so they have more normal hours than I do, so we're often watching each other's dogs,
mm-hmm.
so in that way, it's sort of an ideal situation, and, you know, I live between two parks, you know, so I have Tenney Laugham on one side and James Madison on the other, so
mm-hmm.
long walks were easy for us, so.
Right. All right, so we've hit the hour mark, which is usually about my
mm-hmm.
my time here, but, and we've sort of jumped all over
sure.
your time here in Madison, but if there's something, I always want to give space for the narrator if there's something on your mind that you want to talk about in case we don't or forget to talk about it the next time. So is there anything else you want to discuss?
No, I think, next time I guess we'll continue to talk about sort of my acclimation to Madison, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, wanting to talk about how race factored into that, I think, would be interesting.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. All right, so we will do that next time, and then depending on how next time goes, we'll also maybe go back in time a little bit.
Yeah.
And your process of coming out.
Sure.
All right, so this concludes the interview with Gabe. Gabe, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah,
appreciate
totally.
It.
Thank you.